felt it through the mating bond flowing between us. His eyes did not leave mine as he prowled over me, every movement graceful as a stalking plains cat. Interlacing our fingers, his breathing uneven, Reese used a knee to nudge my legs apart and settle between them. Carefully, lovingly, he laid our joined hands beside my head as he guided himself into me and whispered in my ear, "You're mine too." At the first nudge of him, I surged forward to claim his mouth. I dragged my tongue over his teeth, swallowing his groan of pleasure as his hips rolled in gentle thrusts and he pushed in and in and in. Home. This was home. And when Reese was seated to the hilt, when he paused to let me adjust to the fullness of him, I thought I might explode into moonlight and flame, thought I might die from the sheer force of what swept through me. My pants were edged with sobs as I dug my fingers into his back, and Reese withdrew slightly to study my face, to read what was there. "Never again," he promised as he pulled out, then thrust back in with excruciating slowness. He kissed my brow, my temple.
"My darling Feyre."
Beyond words, I moved my hips, urging him deeper, harder. Reese obliged me. With every movement, every shared breath, every whispered endearment and moan, that mating bond I'd hidden so far inside myself grew brighter, clearer. And when it again shone as brilliantly as adamant, my release cascaded through me, leaving my skin glowing like a newborn star in its wake. At the sight of it, right as I dragged a finger down the sensitive inside of his wing, Reese shouted my name and found his pleasure. I held him through every heaving breath, held him as he at last stilled, lingering inside me, and relished the feel of his skin on mine. For long minutes we remained there, tangled together, listening to our breathing even out, the sound of it finer than any music. After a while, Reese lifted his chest enough to take my right hand, to examine the tattoos inked there. He kissed one of the whorls of near black-blue ink. His throat bobbed. "I missed you. Every second, every breath. Not just this," he said, shifting his hips for emphasis and dragging a groan from deep in my throat. "But talking to you, laughing with you, I missed having you in my bed, but missed having you as my friend even more." My eyes burned. "I know," I managed to say, stroking a hand down his wings, his back. "I know." I kissed his bare shoulder, right over a whorl of Illyrian tattoo. "Never again," I promised him, and whispered it over and over as the sunlight drifted across the floor. Chapter 15. My sisters had been living in the House of Wind since they'd arrived in Valaris. They didn't leave the palace, built into the upper parts of a flat-topped mountain overlooking the city. They didn't ask for anything or anyone, so I would go to them. Lucian was waiting in the sitting room when Reese and I came downstairs at last, my mate having given the silent order for them to return. Unsurprisingly, Cassian and Asriel were casually seated in the dining room across the hall, eating lunch and marking every single breath Lucian emitted. Cassian smirked at me, brows flicking up. I shot him a warning glare that dared him to comment. Asriel, thankfully, just kicked Cassian under the table. Cassian gawked at Asriel, as if to declare, "I wasn't going to say anything," while I approached the open archway into the sitting room, Lucian rising to his feet. I fought my cringe as I halted in the threshold. Lucian was still in his travel-worn, filthy clothes. His face and hands, at least, were clean, but I should have gotten him something else. Remembered to offer him... The thought rippled away into nothing as Rhys appeared at my side. Lucian did not bother to hide the slight curling of his lip. As if he could see the mating bond glowing between Rhys and me. His eyes, both russet and golden, slid down my body, to my hand. To the ring now on my finger, at the star sapphire sky bright against the silver. A simple silver band sat on Rhysand's matching finger. We'd slid them onto each other's hands before coming downstairs, more intimate and searing than any publicly made vows. I'd told Rhys before we did so that I had half a mind to deposit his ring at the weaver's cottage and make him retrieve it. He'd laughed and said that if I truly felt it was necessary to settle the score between us, perhaps I could find some other creature for him to battle, one that wouldn't delight in removing my favorite part from his body. I'd only kissed him, murmuring something about someone thinking rather highly of themselves, and had placed the ring he'd selected for himself, bought here in Valaris while I'd been away, onto his finger. Any joy, any lingering laughter from that moment, those silent vows. It curled up like leaves in a fire as Lucian sneered at our rings. How close we stood. I swallowed. Rhys noted it too. It was impossible to miss. My mate leaned against the carved archway and drawled to Lucian, I assume Cassian or Asriel has explained that if you threaten anyone in this house, this territory, we'll show you ways to die you've never even imagined. Indeed, the Illyrians smirked from where they lingered in the dining room threshold. Asriel was by far the more terrifying of the pair. Something twisted in my gut at the threat. The smooth, sleek aggression. Lucian was... had been my friend. He wasn't my enemy, not entirely. But, Rhys continued, sliding his hands into his pockets,
I can understand how difficult this past month has been for you. I know Feyre explained we aren't exactly as rumor suggests.
I'd led him into my mind before we'd come down, shown him all that had occurred at the Spring Court. But hearing it and seeing it are two different things. He shrugged with one shoulder. Elaine has been cared for. Her participation in life here has been entirely her choice. No one but us and a few trusted servants have entered the House of Wind. Lucian remained silent.
I was in love with Feyre, Rhys said quietly, long before she ever returned the feeling.
Lucian crossed his arms. How fortunate you got what you wanted in the end. I closed my eyes for a heartbeat. Cassian and Asriel stilled, waiting for the order.
I will only say this once, warned the High Lord of the Night Court. Even Lucian flinched.
I suspected Feyre was my mate before I ever knew she was involved with Tamlin.
And when I learned of it, if it made her happy, I was willing to step back. You came to our house and stole her away on her wedding day.
I was going to call the wedding off, I cut in, taking a step toward Lucian.
You knew it.
Rhysand went on before Lucian could snap a reply.
I was willing to lose my mate to another male. I was willing to let them marry, if it brought her joy. But what I was not willing to do was let her suffer. To let her fade away into a shadow, and the moment that piece of shit blew apart his study, the moment he locked her in that house.
His wings ripped from him and Lucian started. Rhys bared his teeth. My limbs turned light, trembling at the dark power curling in the corners of the room. Not fear, never fear of him, but at the shattered control as Rhys snarled at Lucian.
My mate may one day find it in herself to forgive him, forgive you, but I will never forget how it felt to sense her terror in those moments.
My cheeks heated, especially as Cassian and Asriel stalked closer, those hazel eyes now filled with a mix of sympathy and wrath.
I never talked about it to them, what had gone on that day Tamlin had destroyed his study, or the day he'd sealed me inside the manor. I'd never asked Rhys if he'd informed them. From the fury rippling from Cassian, the cold rage seeping from Asriel, I didn't think so. Lucian, to his credit, didn't back away a step, from Rhys, or me, or the Illyrians. The clever fox stares down winged death. The painting flashed into my mind.
So again, I will say this only once,
Rhys went on, his expression smoothing into lethal calm, dragging me from the colors and light and shadows gathering in my mind.
Feyre did not dishonor or betray Tamlin.
I revealed the mating bond months later, and she gave me hell for it, don't worry. But now that you've found your mate in a similar situation, perhaps you will try to understand how it felt. And if you can't be bothered, then I hope you're wise enough to keep your mouth shut. Because the next time you look at my mate with that disdain and disgust, I won't bother to explain it again, and I will rip out your fucking throat.
Rhys said it so mildly that the threat took a second to register, to settle in me like a stone plunked into a pool. Lucian only shifted on his feet, wary, considering. I counted the heartbeats, debating how much I'd interfere if he said something truly stupid, when he at last murmured, "There is a longer story to be told, it seems." Smart answer. The rage ebbed from Rhys's face, and Cassian's and Asriel's shoulders relaxed ever so slightly.
"Just once," Lucian had said to me during those days on the run. That was all he wanted, to see Elaine only once. And then, I'd have to figure out what to do with him. Unless my mate already had some plan in motion. One look at Rhys, who lifted his brows as if to say, "He's all yours," told me it was my call. But until then, I cleared my throat. "I'm going to see my sisters up at the house," I said to Lucian, whose eyes snapped to mine, the metal one tightening and whirring. I forced a grim smile to my face. "Would you like to come?" Lucian weighed my offer, and the three males monitoring his every blink and breath. He only nodded. Another wise decision. We were gone within minutes, the quick walk up to the roof of the townhouse serving as Lucian's tour of my home. I didn't bother point out the bedrooms. Lucian certainly didn't ask. Asriel left us as we took to the skies, murmuring that he had some pressing business to attend to. From the glare Cassian gave him, I wondered if the Shadow Singer had invented it to avoid carrying Lucian to the House of Wind. But Rhys's subtle nod to Asriel told me enough. There were indeed matters afoot. Plans in motion, as they always were. And once I finished visiting my sisters, I'd get answers of my own. So Cassian bore a stone-faced Lucian into the skies, and Rhys swept me into his arms, shooting us gracefully into the cloudless blue. With every wing beat, with every deep inhale of the citrus and salt breeze, some tightness in my body uncoiled. Even if every wing beat brought us closer to the house looming above Valaris, to my sisters. The House of Wind had been carved into the red, sun-warmed stone of the flat-topped mountains that lurked over one edge of the city, with countless balconies and patios jutting to overhang the thousand-foot drop to the valley floor. Valaris's winding streets flowed right to the sheer wall of the mountain itself, and snaking through it wove the Sidra, a glittering, bright band in the midday sun. As we landed on the veranda that edged our usual dining room, Cassian and Lucian alighting behind us, I let it sink in. The city, and the river, and the distant sea,
the jagged mountains on the other side of Valaris, and the blazing blue of the sky above. And the House of Wind, my other home. The grand formal sister to the townhouse, our public home, I supposed, where we would hold meetings and receive guests who weren't family. A far more pleasant alternative to my other residence, the Court of Nightmares. At least there I could stay in the Moonstone Palace high atop the mountain under which the hewn city had been built, though the people I'd rule over. I shut them from my thoughts as I adjusted my braid, tucking in strands that had been whipped free by the gentle wind Rhys had allowed through his shield while flying. Lucian just walked to the balcony rail and stared out. I didn't quite blame him. I glanced over a shoulder to where Rhys and Cassian now stood. Rhys lifted a brow.
Wait inside.
Rhys's smile was sharp.
So you won't have any witnesses when you push him over the railing?
I gave him an incredulous look and strode for Lucian. Rhys's murmur to Cassian about getting a drink in the dining room, the only indication of their departure. That, and the near silent opening and closing of the glass doors that led into the dining room beyond. The same room where I'd first met most of them. My new family. I came up beside Lucian, the wind ripping strands of his red hair free from where he'd tied it at his nape.
This isn't what I expected,
he said, taking in the sprawl of Valaris. The city is still rebuilding after the Highburn attack. His eyes dropped to the carved balcony rail.
Even though we had no part in that. I'm sorry, but that's not what I meant.
He glanced behind us to where Rhys and Cassian waited inside the dining room, drinks now in hand, leaning all too casually against the giant oak table in its center. They became immensely interested in some spot or stain on the surface between them. I scowled at them, but swallowed. And even though my sisters waited inside, even though the urge to see them was so tangible I wouldn't have been surprised to find a rope tugging me into the house, I said to Lucian, Rhys saved my life on Kalamai. So I told him. All of it. The story that perhaps would help him understand. And realize how truly safe Elaine was. He now was. I eventually summoned Rhys to explain his own history, and he gave Lucian the barest details. None of the vulnerable, sorrowful bits that had reduced me to tears in that mountain cabin, but it painted a clear enough picture. Lucian said nothing while Rhys spoke, or when I continued with my tale, Cassian often chiming in with his own account of how it had been to live with two mated yet unmated people, to pretend Rhys wasn't courting me, to welcome me into their little circle. I didn't know how long had passed when we finished, though Rhys and Cassian used the time to unabashedly sun their wings by an open balcony ledge. I left off our story at Highburn, at the day I'd gone back to the Spring Court. Silence fell, and Rhys and Cassian again walked away, understanding the emotion swimming in Lucian's eye, the meaning of the long breath he blew out. When we were alone, Lucian rubbed his eyes.
I've seen Rhysand do such horrible things. Seen him play the Dark Prince over and over. And yet you tell me it was all a lie. A mask. All to protect this place, these people. And I would have laughed at you for believing it, and yet... This city exists. Untouched. Or until recently, I suppose. Even the Dawn Court cities are nothing so lovely as this.
Lucian.
And you love him. And he truly does love you.
Lucian dragged a hand through his red hair.
And all these people I've spent my centuries hating, even fearing, they're your family.
I think Amryn would probably deny that she feels any affection for us.
Amryn is a bedtime story they told us as younglings to make us behave. Amryn was who would drink my blood and carry me to hell if I acted out of line. And yet, there she was, acting more like a cranky old aunt than anything.
We don't enforce protocol and rank here.
Obviously. Reese lives in a townhouse by the cauldron.
He waved an arm to encompass the city. I didn't know what to say, so I kept silent.
I hadn't realized I was a villain in your narrative.
Lucian breathed.
You weren't.
Not entirely. The sun danced on the distant sea, turning the horizon into a glittering sprawl of light. She doesn't know anything about you. Only the basics that Reese gave her. You are a High Lord's son, serving in the Spring Court. And you helped me under the mountain. Nothing else. I didn't add that Reese had told me my sister hadn't asked about him at all. I straightened. I would like to see them first. I know you're anxious.
Just do it,
Lucian said, bracing his forearms on the stone rail of the veranda.
Come get me when she's ready.
I almost patted his shoulder. Almost said something reassuring. But words failed me again as I headed for the dim interior of the house. Reese had given Nesta and Elaine a suite of connecting rooms, all with views overlooking the city and river and distant mountains beyond. But it was in the family library that Reese tracked down Nesta. There was a coiled, razor-sharp tension in Cassian as the three of us strode down the stairways of the house, the red stone halls dim and echoing with the rustle of Cassian's wings and the faint howl of wind rattling at every window. A tension that grew more taut with every step toward the double doors of the library. I hadn't asked if they had seen each other, or spoken since that day in Highburn. Cassian volunteered no information. And I might have asked Reese down the bond had he not opened one of the doors. Had I not immediately spied Nesta curled in an armchair, a book on her knees, looking, for once, very un-Nesta-like. Casual. Perhaps relaxed. Perfectly content to be alone. The moment my shoes scuffed against the stone floor, she shot straight up, back going stiff, closing her book with a muffled thud. Yet her gray-blue eyes didn't so much as widen as they beheld me. As I took her in. Nesta had been beautiful as a human woman. As High Fae? She was devastating. From the utter stillness with which Cassian stood beside me, I wondered if he thought the same thing. She was in a pewter-colored gown, its make simple, yet the material fine. Her hair was braided over the crown of her head, accentuating her long, pale neck, a neck Cassian's eyes darted to, then quickly away from, as she sized us up and said to me, "You're back." With her hair styled like that, it hid the pointed ears. But there was nothing to hide the ethereal grace as she took one step. As her focus again returned to Cassian, and she added, "What do you want?" I felt the blow like a punch to my gut. "At least immortality hasn't changed some things about you." Nesta's look was nothing short of icy. "Is there a purpose to this visit, or may I return to my book?" Reese's hand brushed mine in silent comfort, but his face, hard as stone, and even less amused. But Cassian sauntered over to Nesta, a half-smile spreading across his face. She stood stiffly while he picked up the book, read the title, and chuckled.
"I wouldn't have begged you for a romance reader."
She gave him a withering glare. Cassian leaped through the pages and drawled to me,
"You haven't missed much while you were off destroying our enemies, Farah. It's mostly been this."
Nesta whirled to me. "You accomplished it?" I clenched my jaw. "We'll see how it plays out. I made sure Ianthes suffered." At the hint of rage and fear that crept into Nesta's eyes, I amended, "Not enough, though." I glanced at her hand. the one she'd pointed with at the King of Highburn. Rhys had mentioned no signs of special powers from either of my sisters. Yet that day in Highburn, when Nesta had opened her eyes, I had seen it. Seen something great and terrible within them.
And again, why are you here?
She snatched her book from Cassian, who allowed her to do so, but remained standing beside her, watching every breath, every blink.
I wanted to see you, I said quietly. See how you were doing.
See if I've accepted my lot and found myself grateful for becoming one of them?
I steeled my spine. You're my sister. I watched them hurt you. I wanted to see if you were all right.
A low, bitter laugh. But she turned to Cassian, looked him over as if she were a queen on a throne, and then declared to all of us,
What do I care? I get to be young and beautiful forever. And I never have to go back to those sycophantic fools over the wall. I get to do as I wish, since apparently no one here has any regard for rules or manners or our traditions. Perhaps I should thank you for dragging me into this.
Rhys put a hand on the small of my back before the words even struck their target. Nesta snorted.
But it's not me you should be checking on. I had as little at stake on the other side of the wall as I do here.
Hate rippled over her features, enough hate that I felt sick. Nesta hissed.
She will not leave her room. She will not stop crying. She will not eat or sleep or drink.
Rhys's jaw clenched.
I have asked you over and over if you needed. Why should I allow any of you?
The last word was shot at Cassian with as much venom as a pit viper.
To get near her. It is no one's business but our own.
Elaine's mate is here, I said. And it was the wrong thing to utter in Nesta's presence. She went white with rage.
He is no such thing to her, she snarled, advancing on me enough that Rhys slid a shield into place between us.
As if he, too, had glimpsed that mighty power in her eyes that day in Highburn, and did not know how it would manifest.
If you bring that male anywhere near her, I'll...
You'll what?
Cassian crooned, trailing her at a casual pace as she stopped perhaps 5 feet from me. He lifted a brow as she whirled on him.
You won't join me for practice, so you sure as hell aren't going to hold your own in a fight. You won't talk about your power, so you certainly aren't going to be able to wield them. And you...
Shut your mouth, she snapped.
Every inch the conquering empress.
I told you to stay the hell away from me, and if you...
You come between a male and his mate, Nesta Archeron, and you're going to learn about the consequences the hard way.
Nesta's nostrils flared. Cassian only gave her a crooked grin. I cut in. If Elaine is not up for it, then she won't see him. I won't force the meeting on her. But he does wish to see her, Nesta. I'll ask on his behalf, but the decision will be hers.
The male who sold us out to Highburn.
It's more complicated than that.
Well, it will certainly be more complicated when Father returns and finds us gone. What do you plan to tell him about all this?
Seeing as he hasn't sent word from the continent in months, I'll worry about that later, I sniped back, and thanked the cauldron for it, that he was off trading in some lucrative territory. Nesta only shook her head, turning toward the chair and her book.
I don't care. Do what you want.
A stinging dismissal. If not admission that she still trusted me enough to consider Elaine's needs first. Rhys jerked his chin at Cassian in a silent order to leave, and I followed them. I said softly, I'm sorry, Nesta. She didn't answer as she sat stiffly in her chair, picked up her book, and dutifully ignored us. A blow to the face would have been better. When I looked ahead, I found Cassian staring back at Nesta as well. I wondered why no one had yet mentioned what now shone in Cassian's eyes as he gazed at my sister. The sorrow and the longing. The suite was filled with sunlight. Every curtain shoved back as far as it could go, to let in as much sun as possible. As if any bit of darkness was abhorrent, as if to chase it away. And seated in a small chair before the sunniest of windows, her back to us, was Elaine. Where Nesta had been in contented silence before we found her, Elaine's silence was hollow, empty. Her hair was down, not even braided. I couldn't remember the last time I'd seen it unbound. She wore a moon-white silk dressing robe. She did not look, or speak, or even flinch as we entered. Her two thin arms rested on her chair, that iron engagement ring still encircled her finger. Her skin was so pale, it looked like fresh snow in the harsh light. I realized then that the color of death, of sorrow, was white. The lack of color, of vibrancy. I left Cassian and Rhys by the door. Nesta's rage was better than this shell, this void. My breath caught as I edged around her chair, beheld the city view she stared so blankly at, then beheld the hollowed-out cheeks, the bloodless lips, the brown eyes that had once been rich and warm and now seemed utterly dull. Like grave dirt. She didn't so much as look at me as I said softly, "Elaine?" I didn't dare reach for her hand. I didn't dare get too close. I had done this. I had brought this upon them. "I'm back," I added, a bit limply, uselessly. All she said was, "I want to go home." I closed my eyes, my chest unbearably tight. "I know." "You'll be looking for me," she whispered. "I know," I said again. Not Lucien. She wasn't talking about him at all.
"We were supposed to be married next week."
I put a hand on my chest, as if it had stopped the cracking in there. "I'm sorry." Nothing. Not even a flicker of emotion.
"Everyone keeps saying that."
Her thumb brushed the ring on her finger.
"But it doesn't fix anything, does it?"
I couldn't get enough air in. I couldn't breathe, looking at this broken, carved-out thing my sister had become. What I'd robbed her of, what I'd taken from her. Rhys was there, an arm sliding around my waist. "Can we get you anything, Elaine?" He spoke with such gentleness I could barely stand it.
"I want to go home," she repeated.
I couldn't ask her. About Lucien, not now, not yet. I turned away, fully prepared to bolt and completely fall apart in another room, another section of the house. But Lucien was standing in the doorway. And from the devastation on his face, I knew he'd heard every word. Seen and heard and felt the hollowness and despair radiating from her. Elaine had always been gentle and sweet, and I'd considered it a different sort of strength, a better strength, to look at the hardness of the world and choose, over and over, to love, to be kind. She had been always so full of light. Perhaps that was why now she kept all the curtains open. To fill the void that existed where all of that light had once been. And now, nothing remained. Chapter 16 Rhysand silently led Lucien to the suite he'd been occupying at the opposite end of the House of Wind. Cassian and I trailed behind, none of us speaking until my mate opened a set of onyx doors to reveal a sunny sitting room carved from more red stone. Beyond the wall of windows, the city flowed far below, the view stretching to the distant jagged mountains and glittering sea. Rhys paused in the center of a midnight blue hand-woven rug and gestured to the sealed doors on his left.
Bedroom?
He waved a lazy hand toward the single door on the opposite wall.
Bathing room.
Lucian surveyed it all with cool indifference. What he felt about Elaine, what he planned to do, I didn't want to ask.
I assume you'll need clothes,
Rhys went on, nodding toward Lucian's filthy jacket and pants, which he'd worn for the past week while we scrambled through territories. Indeed, that was blood-splattered in several spots.
Any preferences for attire?
That drew Lucian's attention, the male shifting enough to take in Rhys, to note Cassian and me lurking in the doorway.
Is there a cost? If you're trying to say that you have no money, don't worry. The clothes are complimentary.
Rhys gave him a half-smile.
If you're trying to ask if this is some sort of bribe...
A shrug.
You are a High Lord's son. It would be bad manners not to house and clothe you in your time of need.
Lucian bristled. Stop baiting him, I shot down the bond.
But it's so fun,
came the purred reply. Something had rattled him, rattled Rhys enough that taunting Lucian was an easy way to take the edge off. I stepped closer, Cassian remaining behind me as I told Lucian, We'll be back for dinner in a few hours. Rest a while, bathe. If you need anything, pull that rope by the door. Lucian stiffened. Not at what I'd said, I realized, but at the tone. A hostess. But he asked, What of Elaine?
Your call,
Rhys offered. I need to think about it, I answered plainly. Until I figure out what to do with her, with Nesta, stay out of their way, I added, perhaps too tightly. This house is warded against winnowing, both from outside and within. There's one way out, the stairs to the city. It, too, is warded and guarded. Please don't do anything stupid.
So am I a prisoner?
I could feel the response simmering in Rhys, but I shook my head. No, but understand, while you may be her mate, Elaine is my sister. I'll do what I must to protect her from further harm.
I would never hurt her.
A bleak sort of honesty in his words. I simply nodded, loosening a breath, and met Rhysand's stare in silent urging. My mate gave no indication of my wordless plea as he said,
You are free to wander where you wish. Into the city itself, if you feel like braving the stairs. But there are two conditions. You are not to take either sister, and you are not to enter their floor. If you require a book from the library, you will ask the servants. If you wish to speak to Elaine or Nesta, you will also ask the servants, who will ask us. If you disregard those rules, I'll lock you in a room with Amryn.
Then Rhys turned away, hands sliding into his pockets as he offered his hooked elbow to me. I looped my arm through his, but said to Lucian, We'll see you in a few hours. We were almost to the door, Cassian already in the hall, when Lucian said to me,
Thank you.
I didn't dare ask him for what. We flew right to Amryn's loft. More than a few people waving as we soared over the rooftops of Valaris. My smile wasn't faked when I waved back to them. My people. Rhys only held me a bit tighter while I did so. His own smile as bright as the sun on the Sidra. Mor and Asriel were already waiting inside Amryn's apartment, seated like scolded children on the threadbare divan against the wall, while the dark-haired female flipped through the pages of books sprawled around her on the floor. Mor gave me a grateful, relieved look as we entered, Asriel's own face revealing nothing while he stood, keeping a careful, too casual distance from her side. But it was Amren who said from the floor, "You should kill Baron and his sons, and set up the handsome one as High Lord of Autumn, self-imposed exile or no. It will make life easier."
"I'll take that into consideration,"
Rhys said, striding toward her while I remained with the others. If they were hanging back, Amren had to be in some mood. I blew out a breath. "Who else thinks it's a terrible idea to leave the three of them up at the House of Wind?" Cassian raised his hand as Rhys and Moore chuckled. The High Lord's general said,
"I give him an hour before he tries to see her."
30 minutes, Moore countered, sitting back down on the divan and crossing her legs. I cringed. I guarantee Nesta is now guarding Elaine. I think she might honestly kill him if he so much as tries to touch her.
"Not without training, she won't,"
Cassian grumbled, tucking in his wings as he claimed the seat beside Moore that Asriel had vacated. The Shadow Singer didn't so much as look at it. No, Asriel just walked to the wall beside Cassian and leaned against the wood paneling. But Rhys and the others remained quiet enough that I knew to proceed carefully as I asked Cassian, "Nesta spoke as if you've been up at the house often. You've offered to train her?" Cassian's hazel eyes shuddered as he crossed a booted ankle over another, stretching his muscled legs before him.
"I go up there every other day. It's good exercise for my wings."
Those wings shifted in emphasis. Not a scratch marred them. "And?"
"And what you saw in the library is a pleasanter version of the conversation we always have."
Moore's lips pressed into a thin line, as if she was trying her best not to say anything. Asriel was trying his best to shoot a warning stare at Moore to remind her to indeed keep her mouth shut, as if they'd already discussed this many times.
"I don't blame her,"
Cassian said, shrugging despite his words.
"She was violated. Her body stopped belonging wholly to her."
His jaw clenched. Even Amren didn't dare say anything.
"And I am going to peel the King of Highburn's skin off his bones the next time I see him."
His siphons flickered in answer. Rhys said casually,
"I'm sure the king will thoroughly enjoy the experience."
Cassian glowered.
"I mean it." "Oh, I have no doubt that you do."
Rhys's violet eyes were dazzling in the dimness of the loft.
"But before you lose yourself in plans for revenge, do remember that we have a war to plan first." "Asshole."
A corner of my mate's mouth tugged upward, and Rhys was goading him, working Cassian into a temper to keep that brittle edge of guilt from consuming him. The others letting him take on the task, likely having done it several times themselves these weeks.
"I am most definitely that," Rhys said. "But the fact still remains that revenge is secondary to winning this war."
Cassian opened his mouth, as if he'd keep arguing, but Rhys peered at the book scattered on the lush carpet.
"Nothing?"
he asked Amren. "I don't know why you sent those two buffoons," a narrowed glance toward Moore and Asriel, "to monitor me." So this was where Asriel had gone, right to the loft, to no doubt spare Moore from enduring Amren duty alone. But Amren's tone, cranky, yes, but perhaps a bit of a front, too, to banish that too fragile gleam in Cassian's eyes. "We're not monitoring you," Moore said, tapping her foot on the carpet. "We're monitoring the book." And as she said it, I felt it. Heard it. Amren had placed the Book of Breathings on her nightstand, a glass of old blood atop it. I didn't know whether to laugh or cringe. The latter won out as the book murmured, "Hello, sweet-faced liar. Hello, princess with
Oh, be quiet, Amryn hissed toward the book, who shut up.
Odious thing, she muttered, and went back to the tome before her.
Rhys gave me a wry smile.
Since the two halves of the book were joined back together, it has been known to speak every now and then.
What does it say?
Utter nonsense, Amryn spat, scowling at the book.
It just likes to hear itself talk, like most of the people cramping up my apartment.
Cassian smirked.
Did someone forget to feed Amryn again?
She pointed a warning finger at him without so much as looking up.
Is there a reason, Rhysand, why you dragged your yapping pack into my home?
Her home was little more than a giant converted attic, but none of us dared argue, as Moore, Cassian, and Asriel finally came closer, forming a small circle around Amryn's sprawl in the center of the room. Rhys said to me,
The information you got from Dagdan and Branna confirms what we've been gathering ourselves while you were gone. Especially Hybern's potential allies in other territories. On the continent.
Vultures, Moore muttered, and Cassian looked inclined to agree.
But Rhys had indeed been spying, while Asriel had been... Rhys snorted.
I can stay hidden, mate.
I glared at him. But Asriel cut in.
Having Hybern's movements confirmed by you, Feyre, is what we needed.
Why? Cassian crossed his arms.
We barely stand a chance of surviving Hybern's armies on our own.
If armies from Valahan, Montessere, and Rask join them...
He drew a line across his tan throat. Moore elbowed him in the ribs. Cassian nudged her right back, as Asriel shook his head at both of them, shadows coiling around the tips of his wings.
Are those three territories that powerful?
Perhaps it was a foolish question, showing how little I knew of the fairy lands on the continent.
Yes,
Asriel said, no judgment in his hazel eyes.
Valahan has the numbers, Montessere has the money, and Rask... It is large enough to have both.
And we have no potential allies amongst the other overseas territories? Rhys pulled at a stray thread on the cuff of his black jacket.
Not ones that would sail here to help.
My stomach turned. What of Miriam and Draken? He'd once refused to consider, but...
You fought for Miriam and Draken centuries ago. I said to Rhys.
He'd done a great deal more than that, if Durian was to be believed.
Perhaps it's time to call in that debt.
But Rhys shook his head.
We tried. Asriel went to Cretea.
The island where Miriam, Draken, and their unified human and fey peoples had secretly lived for the past 5 centuries.
It was abandoned,
Asriel said.
In ruin.
With no trace of what happened or where they went.
You think Hybern?
There was no sign of Hybern. Or of any harm, Moore cut in, her face taut. They had been her friends, too, during the war. Miriam and Draken, and the human queens who had gotten the treaty signed. And it was worry, true, deep worry, that guttered in her brown eyes. In all their eyes.
Then... Do you think they heard about Hybern and ran?
I asked. Draken had a winged legion, Rhys had once told me, if there was any chance of finding them.
The Draken and Miriam I knew wouldn't have run. Not from this,
Rhys said. Moore leaned forward, her golden hair spilling over her shoulders.
But with Jurian now a player in this conflict, Miriam and Draken, whether they like it or not, have always been tied to him. I don't blame them for running, if he truly hunts them.
Rhys's face slackened for a heartbeat.
That is what the King of Hybern has on Jurian,
he murmured.
Why Jurian works for him.
My brow furrowed.
Miriam died. A spear through her chest during the last battle at the sea,
Rhys explained.
She bled out while she was carried to safety. But Draken knew of a sacred, hidden island where an object of great and terrible power had been concealed. An object made by the cauldron itself, legend claimed. He brought her there. To Cretea. Used the item to resurrect her, make her immortal.
As you are made, Feyre.
Amryn had said it, months ago, that Miriam had been made as I was. Amryn seemed to remember it, too, as she said,
The King of Highburn must have promised Jurien to use the cauldron to track the item, to where Miriam and Draken now live. Perhaps they figured that out, and left as fast as they could.
And for revenge, for that insane rage that hounded Jurien, he'd do whatever the King of Highburn asked, so he could kill Miriam himself. But where did they go?
I looked to Azriel, the Shadow Singer still standing with preternatural stillness against the wall.
You found no trace at all of where they might have vanished to?
None,
Rhys answered for him.
We've sent messengers back since, to no avail.
I rubbed at my face, sealing off that path of hope. Then, if they're not a possible ally, how do we keep those other territories on the continent from joining with Highburn? From sending their armies here? I winced. That's our plan, isn't it? Rhys smiled grimly.
It is. One we've been working on while you were away.
I waited, trying not to pace as Amryn's silver eyes seemed to glow with amusement.
I looked at Highburn first, at its people, as best I could.
He'd gone to Highburn? Rhys smirked at the concern flaring across my face.
I'd hoped that Highburn might have some internal conflict to exploit, to get them to collapse from within, that its people might not want this war, might see it as costly and dangerous and unnecessary. But 500 years on that island, with little trade, little opportunity. Highburn's people are hungry for change. Or rather, a change back to the old days, when they had human slaves to do their work, when there were no barriers keeping them from what they now perceive as their right.
Amryn slammed shut the book she'd been perusing.
Fools!
She shook her head, inky hair swaying, as she scowled up at me.
Highburn's wealth has been dwindling for centuries. Most of their trade routes before the war dealt with the South, with the Blackland. But once it went to the humans... We don't know if Highburn's king deliberately failed to establish new trade routes and opportunities for his people in order to one day fuel this war, or if he was just that short-sighted and let everything fall apart. But for centuries now, Highburn's people have been festering. Highburn let their resentment of their growing stagnation and poverty fester.
There are many High Fae, Moore said carefully, who believed before the war, and still believe now, that humans... that they are property. There were many High Fae who knew nothing but privilege thanks to those slaves. And when that privilege was ripped away from them, when they were forced to leave their homelands, or forced to make room for other High Fae and reform territories, create new ones, above that wall, they have not forgotten that anger, even centuries later. Especially not in places like Highburn, where their territory and population remained mostly untouched by change. They were one of the few who didn't have to yield any land to the wall. And didn't yield any land to the Fae territories, now looking for a new home. Isolated, growing poorer, with no slaves to do their labor. Highburn had long viewed the days before the war as a golden era, and these centuries since, as a dark age.
I rubbed at my chest. They're all insane to think that,
Rhys nodded.
Yes, they certainly are. But don't forget that their king has encouraged these limited worldviews. He didn't expand their trade routes, didn't allow other territories to take any of his land and bring their cultures. He considered where things went wrong for the loyalists in the war, how they ultimately yielded not from being overwhelmed, but because they began arguing amongst themselves. Highburn has had a long, long while to think on those mistakes, and how to avoid them at any cost. So he made sure his people are completely for this war, completely for the idea of the wall coming down, because they think it will somehow restore this gilded vision of the past. Highburn's people see their king and their armies not as conquerors, but as liberators of High Fae, and those who stand with them.
Nausea churned in my gut. How can anyone believe that? Asriel ran a scarred hand through his hair.
That's what we've been learning, listening in Highburn, and in territories like Rask and Monacair and Valahan.
We're to be made an example of, girl, Amryn explained. Prithian. We were among the fiercest defenders and negotiators of the treaty. Highburn wants to claim Prithian not only to clear the path to the continent, but to make an example of what happens to High Fae territories that defend the treaty.
But surely other territories would protect it, I said, scanning their faces.
Not as many as we'd hoped, Rhys admitted, wincing. There are many, too many, who have also felt squashed and suffocated during these centuries. They want their old lands back beneath the wall, and the power and prosperity that came with it. Their vision of the past has been colored by 500 years of struggling to adjust and thrive.
Perhaps we did them a disservice, Moore mused, in not sharing enough of our wealth, our territory. Perhaps we are to blame for allowing some of this to rot and fester.
That remains to be discussed, Amryn said, waving a delicate hand. The point is that we are not facing an army hell-bent on destruction. They're hell-bent on what they believe is liberation, of High Fae stifled by the wall and what they believe still belongs to them.
I swallowed. So how do the other territories play into it? The three Highburn claims will ally with him.
I looked between Rhys and Asriel.
You said you were over there?
Rhys shrugged.
Over there, in Highburn, in the other territories.
He winked at my gaping mouth.
I had to keep myself busy to avoid missing you.
Moore rolled her eyes. But it was Cassian who said,
We can't afford to let those three territories join with Highburn. If they send armies to Prithian, we're done.
So what do we do? Rhys leaned against the carved post of Amryn's bed.
We've been keeping them busy.
He jerked his chin to Asriel.
We planted information, truth and lies, and a blend of both, for them to find. And also scattered some of it among our old allies, who are now balking at supporting us.
Asriel's smile was a slash of white. Lies and truth. The Shadow Singer and his spies had sowed them in foreign courts. My brow narrowed.
You've been playing the territories on the continent off each other?
We've been making sure that they're kept busy with each other,
Cassian said, a hint of wicked humor glinting in his hazel eyes.
Making sure that longtime enemies and rival nations of Rask, Valahan, and Montessere have suddenly received information that has them worried about being attacked and raising their own defenses, which in turn has made Rask, Valahan, and Montessere start looking toward their own borders and not our own.
If our allies from the war are too scared to come here to fight, Moore said, folding her arms up over her chest, then as long as they're keeping the others occupied, keeping them from sailing here. We don't care. I blinked at them. At Rhys.
Brilliant. Utterly brilliant. To keep them so focused and fearful.